Hello, welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, October 24th. I'm Dagna, your reader today. Today's mini editorials written by Barry Klaus of Salix, Iowa, and Barry writes, Trump speaking at the Orpheum? Did we have him pay in advance this time? Again, this was written by Barry Klaus of Salix, Iowa. And now we'll move to a five-day forecast recap for the Siouxland area. And today, there could be a possible stray afternoon thunderstorm with a high of 72 and a low tonight of 55, and there could be some rain overnight. And Wednesday, we'll have a high of 69 and a low of 61, and there could be a couple of showers during the day. Thursday morning could possibly have some showers with a high of 64 and a low of 38. Friday could be some sun. It will be windy and chilly with a high of 44 and a low of 31. And Saturday will again be a possibility of some showers with a high of 39 and a low of 29. We'll begin today with a recap of the council meeting yesterday, the Sioux City Council. And the headline is, Council Moves Forward Resolution for Relocation of Construction Equipment Distributor. A distributor of construction and mining equipment is a step closer to relocating its Sioux City operations to Expedition Business Park by Sioux Gateway Airport. The City Council voted 4-0 Monday to approve a resolution to set a public hearing concerning the proposed amending of the Donner Park Urban Renewal Plan. Councilman Matthew O'Kane was absent from the meeting. Amending the plan will allow the council to consider a development and minimum assessment agreement with Road Machinery and Supplies Company. This past summer, Road Machinery and Supplies Company expressed interest in purchasing land in the Expedition Business Park at the intersection of Al Haynes Drive and Discovery Boulevard for a new location for their Sioux City operation. The Minnesota-based company currently has a location at 1400 Lewis Boulevard. As part of the project, the company proposes to purchase the 11.47-acre parcel from the city and construct a 10,080-square-foot facility. The facility will include offices, high bay space for servicing equipment, a wash bay, and space for outdoor storage of equipment and machinery. The proposed purchase price is $37,897 per acre for a total price of $434,679. The project will retain 6 existing jobs. The company will likely add new employees as Road Machinery and Supplies Company expands its presence in the region, according to city documents. The council's passage of the resolution initiates a required 30-day hearing period. During that period, other proposals could be submitted to the city. A public hearing will be held on November 27th to evaluate all proposals received. If no other proposals are received, a development agreement between the city and Road Machinery and Supplies Company will be presented to the council for consideration immediately following the public hearing. A potential development agreement would include the sale of land along Al Haynes Drive and property tax rebates to assist with the project. The city's assistance would not exceed $800,000, according to the documents. The documents stated that the city will see immediate revenue through the proceeds of the land sale and will also see increased tax revenue through new development on the site. In other action, the City Council also voted to authorize adjustments to the sewer rates for outside municipalities and outside improvement districts. The rate increases are needed to provide revenue for the wastewater treatment plant facility improvements plan project. The improvements are intended to be implemented across 2 phases, with a potential 3rd future growth-driven phase. The cost of all 3 phases is estimated at $470 million. Before the vote, Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore asked Tom Pingle, the city's utility director in charge of the plant, to confirm that the other 4 municipalities, Dakota Dunes, North Sioux City, Sergeant Bluff, and South Sioux City, are aware of the adjustments and that the city of Sioux City has been working with and listening to those municipalities. Pingle noted that the city sister cities are well aware. Rates will increase from $3.077 per 1,000 gallons to $4.062, effective July 1, 2024. Then rates will increase to $4.183 on July 1, 2025 and to $4.309 on July 1, 2026. In May, in spite of objections from the business community, the Council approved the final reading of a residential, commercial, and industrial sewer rate hike to help fund a rebuild of the plant, which has a history of compliance issues with the state. In January of 2022, the Iowa DNR filed suit against the city over alleged repeated environmental violations, which dated back to March 2012. Our next story has a headline of For Sale, Dozens of Costumes. Jim McKenzie did not expect it. When the 77-year-old Sioux City resident decided he would rid his house of costumes he spent more than 40 years collecting by selling them online, he did not anticipate becoming some sort of locally viral hit. McKenzie, who did union boilermaker work for 32 years, simply hoped he'd free up some space for himself and his wife, Nancy. If he made a few bucks in the process, that would be all right. The for sale posts McKenzie has made to Facebook groups such as Sioux City Swap have done more than help him clear out his wardrobe and make some dough. His posts, which tend to feature the white-haired and mustachioed McKenzie modeling costumes that are decades old, have garnered dozens upon dozens of comments, hundreds of shares, and thousands of views. It's been endearing enough to members of the online community in Sioux City that there are even appreciation posts about his seasonal project. Everybody has been super nice, and it's been a little bit overwhelming because it did not start to create any kind of attention or anything, Jim McKenzie said. Going back a long ways, McKenzie's had an affinity for costumes and Halloween for as long as he can recall. He said years ago he'd make routine trips to the now-defunct Globe Theatrical Supply to rent various get-ups from the store. Because he was such a frequent patron of Globe Theatrical, McKenzie said he became good friends with the owners and then would often be the first to snatch up ensembles when they were put out for clearance. And I collected them over a 40-year span. Some people collect stamps. I collect costumes, Jim McKenzie said. Well before he was showcasing ninja, pirate, and riverboat gambler outfits for sale online, McKenzie would appear at various Sioux City area functions in character. In 1976, he said he walked in the Sioux City Rivercade Parade as Uncle Sam, and he continued doing it for years after. Once McKenzie's son Casey was old enough, he would join his dad on the stilts the uniform required. For his St. Patrick's Day, McKenzie said he would put on leprechaun catcher garb and appear at Bryant Elementary, where his wife Nancy, who's retired, taught kindergarten. In years when the Irish celebration has fallen on a Sunday, Jim and Nancy make sure to stand at the front door of their church and dole out goodies. When it came time for Halloween, the most vaunted of all costume holidays, the McKenzies would dress as a wizard and a witch, stand around a foggy steel cauldron, and jokingly tell trick-or-treating youths to watch out lest they be used as ingredients for some sort of nefarious stew. Basically, he's the entertainer and I'm the sidekick, Nancy McKenzie said. I never was real outgoing and he's made me more outgoing. Nancy, who's been married to Jim for 36 years, said the costume collection was already quite extensive when the couple first met, sizable enough that she could not put a number on how many pieces her husband had. I just know it was a lot, Nancy McKenzie said. She's actually something of a collector herself. Nancy said she has a prominent collection of wooden giraffes from Kenya in her home and 12 or so scarecrows she proudly displays for autumn. I went to the zoo and was watching the giraffes, and one was real close to me and he put his tongue out to get a leaf and I fell in love with them, Nancy McKenzie said about her stock. Within Jim's supplies of outfits, Nancy's quick to mention the wizard and witch as a favorite, as well as the Uncle Sam duds, which she had a matching Betsy Ross for, and a vintage poodle skirt she'd put on to complement her husband's Central High School sweater and jeans. As for Jim, he has a special fondness for a yellow rabbit costume he built for Casey. It had a head with floppy ears and a vest. I just parted with that one yesterday, Jim McKenzie said about the rabbit. It's one of about 20 he's managed to sell since he started posting pieces of his costume collection on Facebook. A substantial amount of them, Jim McKenzie said, have never been worn either because they weren't his size or he just couldn't find a use for them. Jim only started seriously trying to move the units in the past month or so, once Nancy suggested it would be smart to make a push before Halloween. The first raiment Jim posted had a devil's hood with horns and a belt. I didn't ask much for it, Jim McKenzie said. It sat there all this time and people have commented on it like crazy. And I'm mailing the package out to Sioux Falls today. That costume has had 6,555 clicks on it, he noted. It was also one of several get-ups to appear in a Facebook post that ratcheted up awareness of Jim's venture. On Saturday, October 14th, Sioux City resident Colby Niblink said in a Facebook post to the group, "What in the Sioux City is that? No matter how hard things have been for you lately, let's all just take a moment to appreciate the great Jim McKenzie, the man who's been showcasing Halloween costumes he's selling on Sioux City swap pages. I don't know you personally, Jim, but you are a treasure to our city. If you know this man, please tell him he's made my day and he's made the days of many in Sioux City." Since it went up, Niblink's post has netted nearly 700 reactions, more than 40 comments, and 30-plus shares. He said he first came across Jim McKenzie's Dracula post. "I immediately showed my cousin the post as I enjoyed that he actually put the cape on to show it off instead of just laying it on the ground and taking a picture like most people do," Niblink said. Over the next days, Niblink said he began spotting more and more of Jim McKenzie's work. So anyway, this is Jim Niblink looking at the post, and each time he saw one, he'd share it with his family. It got to a point where Niblink decided he should celebrate the efforts with the post. "I did not expect to wake up with over 200 likes on the post the next morning," Niblink said. As the comments were rolling in, Niblink eventually got a friend request and message from Jim McKenzie. It said in part, "I am deeply humbled by your message. I put these costumes up for sale, not expecting anyone to get any enjoyment from the post. Not only did I not expect it, but I didn't even know people were enjoying it until you put up that post. I just wanted to thank you for that moment of discovery. You are the true treasure in my eyes." Some of those comments have come from former students of Nancy McKenzie's. "It has gone way over what he expected, and I never expected that either," she said. Nancy can't quite explain it, and neither can Jim, though he has an idea. "I think it's just the fact that it's not just dressing up to me, it's what you do after you dress up." Teen charged with shooting at Sioux City House. A Sioux City teenager suspected of firing as many as 30 shots at a Sioux City house has been arrested. Paulo Jimenez, 16, was booked into the Woodbury County Jail on Friday on a charge of intimidation with a dangerous weapon to injure and provoke fear. He remains in custody in lieu of a $10,000 bond. He was wanted for arrest for failing to show up for his initial court appearance after a July 28th arrest for a curfew violation. According to court documents, Jimenez was in possession of a .22 caliber rifle with no buttstock attached on July 28th and was driven by another teenager to the 1500 block of Jones Street at about 2 a.m. Once there, they walked across the street and fired 20 to 30 rounds at the front of the home in retaliation of the alleged robbery of Jimenez's friend at the house the day before. The house had several bullet holes and broken windows. Approximately 2 hours later, officers found the two boys who were out past curfew at a vehicle with a broken windshield. Officers searched the vehicle for probable cause and found the .22 rifle. Testing later determined spent shell casings found at the shooting scene were fired by the rifle. Jimenez admitted shooting at the house during a police interview after his arrest, court documents said. Wells marks 110 years in business. Lamar's. Wells Enterprise, the makers of Blue Bunny ice cream, will be celebrating its 110th birthday by donating money that will benefit the company's hometown of Lamar's. During a 1:30 p.m. Tuesday event at the Wells Corporate Center, Wells representatives will present a $50,000 check to the Lamar's Betterment Foundation to support renovations at O'Toole Park. At the check presentation, which will also be attended by the Lamar's mayor, Rob Bixman, and Lamar's Betterment Foundation President Dustin Wright, Wells is expected to discuss other local donations. Hunting accident victim identified, Milford. A 18-year-old Spirit Lake, Iowa man suffered a gunshot wound in a Saturday morning hunting accident in Dickinson County. Joseph Salmon, 18, of Spirit Lake was waterfowl hunting along the shore of a slough at the Spring Run Wildlife Area when the accident occurred, according to a press release from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. The Dickinson County Sheriff's Office received a report of a gunshot injury at around 8:17 a.m. Saturday. Salmon was airlifted to Avera Medical Center in Sioux Falls, where his condition remains unknown. The incident is under investigation by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Law Enforcement Bureau. The area where the incident occurred has been reopened, according to the press release. A GoFundMe page to assist with Salmon's medical expenses has raised more than $25,000 at the time of this writing. Ron DeSantis picks up endorsement from Jennery. Never back down. The super PAC backing Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' presidential run announced Iowa State Representative Tom Jennery, a Republican from Lamar's, has become the 41st Iowa legislator to endorse DeSantis for president. Governor DeSantis has led with conviction and strength on every issue from Israel to fighting COVID lockdowns and beyond, Jennery said in a statement released by the pro-DeSantis super PAC. Here in Iowa, he's been able to meet Iowans in 80 counties, including a visit to Lamar's, and he's earned my support. Governor Reynolds issues bird flu disaster proclamation after the state's first case of bird flu this fall was recorded late last week in a commercial turkey flock in Buena Vista County. Two additional cases were reported Monday. The Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship and the U.S. Department of Agriculture said the new cases are in a commercial turkey flock in Pocahontas County and a mixed species backyard flock in Guthrie County. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds on Friday immediately issued a disaster proclamation for Buena Vista County, her office announced. The proclamation makes available resources from the State Agriculture and Homeland Security Departments, plus other agencies, to assist with managing the disease and preventing its spread. Reynolds issued a disaster proclamation Monday for Pocahontas County, making available the same state resources to assist with tracking and monitoring, containment, disposal, and disinfection. The proclamation also waives regulatory provisions related to commercial vehicles responding to affected sites. Before Friday, the only other bird flu cases confirmed this year were in January, also in a commercial turkey flock in Buena Vista County, and in March in a backyard flock in Chickasaw County. There were 30 confirmed cases of bird flu in Iowa in 2022, according to state records. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the recent cases of bird flu do not present an immediate public health concern. It remains safe to eat poultry products with proper handling and cooking. Producers who suspect signs of bird flu in their flocks should contact their veterinarian immediately, along with state officials at 515-281-5305. We'll now move to the feature Five Questions With, and this time it's with Sioux City Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore. When Bob Scott falls ill and cannot lead a city council meeting, or a prior commitment prevents Sioux City's longest-serving mayor from attending a community event, Dan Moore steps up to the plate and assumes Scott's duties. As mayor pro temp, Moore acts as a vice mayor or a second in command. He's happy to deliver remarks at an event or wield the mayor's gavel when needed. Moore, a Sioux City attorney, was elected to his third four-year term on the City Council in 2021. He chatted with the Journal for our latest installment of Five Questions. Question 1. How long have you served as mayor pro tem? I happen to know exactly how long because I've enjoyed every minute of it. I was appointed by Mayor Bob Scott in January of 2016, January 4th to be exact, and I've served as mayor pro tem as the mayor's appointment, finishing up on 8 years. We'll see what the next 2 years bring. I'm in the middle of my third term on the city council, and so we'll decide if I continue on for 2 more years for 2024 and 2025. I'd very much like to, but that's the mayor's choice. How did you become mayor pro tem? I think I'm a very good council member. I try to give council members and the mayor the pros and cons of any matter that we have before us. And I like to think I do my homework and read the materials and come to the meetings very prepared. So I think the mayor must have seen that in me. And even though he and I do not agree on all the issues, I think the mayor thought I would make a good mayor pro tem and asked me if I would be willing to serve. I said yes right away. Next question. What would you say was the most significant event or time you had to fill in for Mayor Scott? A lot of people will ask me, what is the mayor pro tem? What's the mayor pro tem do? How I respond is that I fill in whenever the mayor is unable to come to an event, speak at an event, run a council meeting, and anything that comes along the way. When the mayor is unavailable, I fill in. I've made that commitment to him and to the council that any time that would arise, I will fill in. Everybody knows this about Mayor Bob Scott. He doesn't miss anything. I don't know how he does it, but he attends very many activities, a lot of meetings. He just covers a lot. So there's some months when I really don't need to do anything as a mayor pro tem. I'm very busy as a council member, but as a mayor pro tem, I don't need to do a lot. A lot of my duties and my service involve if the mayor is suddenly unable to make a meeting, and we've had that a couple of times. But luckily, I prepare for our council meetings, and so it's never shaken me, or I've never been unnerved because at the last minute I might get a call from the city manager at 2 o'clock in the afternoon with a message that the mayor had something come up that he needs to attend and won't be able to be at our meeting today. That seldom happens, but when it does, I need to step in and do a good job. Did you fill in for the Mayor Scott during the commissioning of the USS Sioux City? That's a very significant event. During the course of the night, the mayor took ill and was unable to attend the USS Sioux City ceremonies, so I was able to step in. Now, there was a situation where I was a little bit nervous because we were limited on the time for remarks. I did not have any kind of a speech prepared. Everything I said during that ceremony was how everything came together. Luckily, I had met with a lot of the Navy personnel. I had been very active in the function that they had prior to that ceremony on Saturday morning, so I was prepared with my thoughts, but nothing in writing. I stepped in. People told me I did a good job. I'm really proud to represent the city of Sioux City, and I'm really proud to represent the mayor and the city council. What are the perks of being mayor pro tem? When I think of perks, it's like, what do I get that other council members may not receive, or even get it going broader than that, what do citizens not receive? And really, I think it's having the recognition that I'm doing a good job representing the city, and people tell me that. When it comes to being a council member on my votes, I'll get some constructive criticism of why I should have voted the other way. But as far as serving as mayor pro tem, for the most part, I get very good compliments. And that's important to me because I want to do a professional job for our citizens and for our city. And that, again, was five questions with Sioux City Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore. $470,000 awarded to advance rural development in Iowa. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and the Iowa Economic Development Authority recently announced that more than $470,000 in grants have been awarded to communities across the state to support rural initiatives, including childcare, housing, and leadership development. The grants were awarded through the Empower Rural Iowa Initiative, which Reynolds created in 2018 to drive investment and growth and expand high-speed broadband internet service in rural Iowa. Buchanan and Story counties plan to use the grant money to launch local leadership programs. Seven cities, including Independence, were awarded rural housing assessment grants of $10,000 each to help understand and improve local housing conditions. Three communities, the City of Cascade, Decatur County Hospital, and Jackson County Economic Alliance, were awarded rural child care planning grants of $10,000 each. Reynolds also signed an executive order shifting the focus of the Empower Rural Iowa Initiative as a startup incubator for innovative rural policy. Other changes are designed to streamline operations for efficiency, including a transition from three task forces to one. The initiative will continue to be co-chaired by Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg and a representative from the Isle Rural Development Council appointed by Reynolds. I'm excited to work with the restructured committee with a clear focus on innovative and impactful rural policy, Gregg said in a news release. We look forward to building on the programs like Iowa United First Aid, a pilot program aimed at decreasing emergency response times in rural Iowa, as we address some of the tough challenges and amazing opportunities in rural Iowa. And now moving to Nebraska. Nebraska State Fair doubles its concert budget to $1.5 million. The Nebraska State Fair will have twice as much money to spend on concert booking for 2024 as it did in 2023. The State Fair Board voted Friday to allocate $1.5 million to bring in as many as 7 concerts next year. The concert budget for the 23 fair was $750,000. The money will be used to deliver the caliber of acts that fairgoers want, Carly Schultz, entertainment and events director, said after Friday's meeting. State Fair Board Chair Dawn Caldwell said the fair wants to get acts people will be more excited to purchase tickets for. The fair will have 6 or 7 concerts in 2024. If the number is 7, 4 will be outdoor and 3 indoors. The indoor concerts include the older Nebraskan State concert. This year, the fair had 4 outdoor and 2 indoor. One of the indoor concerts featuring Three Dog Night was arranged by an outside promoter. If 7 concerts are presented in 2024, the number of indoor concerts will increase by 1 and the number of outdoor shows will remain the same. During her report, Schultz said it's becoming necessary to book acts earlier in the year than in years past. She said also that costs are increasing. In another report, marketing director Ray Massey said this year's fair saw an increase in fair attendance from residents of Lancaster and Douglas counties. The increase from Lancaster was 19.4% and from Douglas 26.9%. Massey also talked about the number of digital views the fair received. Between August 1st and September 5th, the fair's mobile app and website had 1.3 million views. In a similar time period, the fair's Facebook page had 1.4 million views. So the digital total was 2.7 million views. Also at Friday's meeting, the board awarded a contract to Ellsbury Construction of Grand Island for phase 1 of infrastructure improvements. The improvements may total 5 phases. The fair hopes to pay for all the work with American Rescue Plan Act funds. Phase 1 will involve work at the training track. Board member Tom Shellpepper said workers will grade the infield for outdoor concerts, which will help with drainage. Work will also be done outside the training track. Instead of having the tractor pull and demolition derby on the infield, they will now be held outside on the track in a dedicated area. And that work may begin as early as November 1st. Man who took guns to Wisconsin Capitol while seeking governor moves to Nebraska. The armed man who twice went to the Wisconsin Capitol looking for Governor Tony Evers said Monday that he had no intention of hurting anyone. He has moved to Nebraska and does not want to go anywhere near the governor. Joshua Plesnick went to the Capitol in Wisconsin on October 4th with a loaded handgun and a holster, demanding to speak with Evers. The governor was not in the building at the time. Plesnick was arrested, and after posting bail, he returned that night to the Capitol with a semi-automatic rifle and a baton hidden in his backpack. He again demanded to talk to Evers, but the building was closed and he was arrested again. Plesnick was charged with a misdemeanor for openly carrying a gun in a public building. He was released on bond on Friday. Plesnick on Monday, in a telephone interview, said he has relocated to Nebraska to live with his family because the incident in Wisconsin made him unemployable. He's homeless, has no money, and his reputation was completely ruined by the media. The media portrayed me as some sort of psychotic white supremacist, which is the furthest from the truth. Because I used to manufacture firearms for a living, and the only people I never sold to were Nazis, Plesnick said. The media had painted me out to be a monster rather than someone who was just actually fighting for justice and peace. Plesnick insisted that his intention that day was to make his case to the governor about why he believed men are not taken seriously when seeking protection orders against women. Plesnick said he thought it was legal to openly carry a weapon in the public building. As I told arresting officers, I would gladly accept my punishment because ignorance of the law is not an excuse, he said. Plesnick said he came back that night with a rifle because he wanted to draw attention to the issue of domestic abuse against men. I was very serious about being heard about this issue because I have so many friends that are males that have been abused by women and they have been arrested even though the woman hit them instead of the other way around. Plesnick, 43, pleaded not guilty to a misdemeanor charge of openly carrying a gun in a public building. Under the terms of his release, he was barred from coming near Evers, the Capitol building, or the governor's residence in nearby Maple Bluff. When asked if he planned to follow the terms of his release, barring his coming to the Capitol or near the governor, Plesnick replied, That's been bleeped, so I'm not sure what he said. And then he said, I'm staying away from the governor. I'm staying away from him. I'm restricted from the area around the Capitol. Obviously, I am in Nebraska, so walking around the Capitol is going to be a little difficult because it's over 500 miles away. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, October 24th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. We'll now go to today's obituaries, starting with Evelyn B. Mendoza, 74, of Sioux City, passed away on Sunday, October 15th, at her residence, surrounded by family. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, October 27th, at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. with a prayer service at 7 p.m. on Thursday, October 26th, at the funeral home. And then Sioux City, two brothers, Terrence Terry and Thomas Frisbee, both of Sioux City, have passed away. Terry, 51, died Friday, October 13th, in a tragic vehicle accident. Tom, 57, died Friday, October 20th, at a local hospital. So one died on October 13th and one on October 20th. A memorial service to honor both Terry and Tom will be held at 4 p.m. on Friday, October 27th, at the Nelson Berger Northside Chapel. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service. Mary Jane Burton, 75, of Sioux City, passed away on Sunday, October 22nd. A funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, October 28th, at Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church. Burial will be at the Calvary Cemetery. Visitation with the family present will be Friday evening at the church from 5 to 7 p.m. and a vigil service beginning at 7 p.m. Mary will be remembered for her faith and joyful laughter. Arrangements are under the direction of Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. James F. Sauerberg, 83, of Sioux City, passed away Friday, September 29th. A graveside service will be at 1 p.m. Friday, October 27th, at Memorial Park Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. James F. Everingham, 89, passed on August 24th at the Veterans Hospital in Denver, Colorado. A mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 28th, at Holy Spirit Retirement Home Chapel, officiated by Father Francis McWinja. Burial will follow at Calvary Cemetery in Sioux City. A luncheon and commemoration of Jim's 90th birthday for friends and family will follow at Holy Spirit Retirement Apartments Dining Room, 1703 West 25th Street, Sioux City. Jim Everingham was born October 28, 1933, as the son of James H. and Phyllis Everingham at St. Vincent's Hospital, Sioux City, where he resided most of his childhood. He entered primary schools in Waterloo, Iowa, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Hunt and Cathedral schools in Sioux City. Jim attended high school at Trinity High School, subsequently Helan High School, graduating in 1952. Jim pursued his education at the University of Iowa for 1 year until drafted into the United States Army. He completed his basic training at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and was scheduled to depart for Korea, but completed his Army service in California. Jim finished his Bachelor of Science degree at Wayne State College on the GI Bill. After receiving his teaching degree, he was hired by Los Angeles School District and began his teaching career at Washington and Los Angeles High Schools as a biology teacher before being hired by Oil Company School in Tripoli, Libya, North Africa. While in North Africa, Jim shared a villa on the Mediterranean Sea with the other OCS teachers. His rapport with his teachers and students led him to become recreation director, counselor, and ultimately principal. The 10 years he was employed in Libya afforded him many opportunities to travel internationally to all continents except Antarctica. His travels throughout the world continued until interrupted by revolution in Tripoli, Libya, resulting in Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's rise to power. Returning to the United States, Jim completed his master's in education at the University of South Dakota and subsequently was employed in Jeffrey City and Upton, Wyoming, as principal and superintendent. During his years in Wyoming, Jim became an avid skier, enjoyed fishing in the Sweetwater River, and hunting fossils in the surrounding mountains. He also rediscovered his love for the Black Hills of South Dakota, where he had visited many times as a child with his family. Jim retired to the warmer weather of Beverly Hills, Florida, where he made his home until his diagnosis of cancer. As his cancer progressed, he relocated to Colorado to live with his sister, Mary Jo, until his passing. Jim was loved by his students, many friends, but most of all, his family. Memorial donations may be made to the Sisters of the Holy Spirit at 1711 West 25th Street in Sioux City, 51103. Francis H. Pop Foley, 100 of Sioux City, pitched his last pitch on Thursday, October 19th, at his residence. A funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, October 25th, at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church. Burial will be Thursday at Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation with the family will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, October 24th, with a vigil service at 7 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel on Stone Boulevard Avenue, or Stone Park Boulevard. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Pop was born on October 5th, 1923, in Charter Oak, Iowa, to Hugh and Catherine Foley. He grew up in Charter Oak and moved to Sioux City during his junior year of high school. He attended East High School, where he immediately took up baseball and graduated in 1941. He served in the United States Army during World War II from 1943 to 1946. He worked for Interbake Foods, formerly Johnson Biscuit Company, for 48 years, retiring as a traffic manager. In 1955, he married Patricia Fleming in Elk Point, South Dakota. They had three daughters. Patricia preceded him in death in 2002. Pop was a member of Immaculate Conception Church from the time he moved to Sioux City as a teenager. He was a sports buff in the truest sense, enjoying everything from basketball to golf to football, but baseball had his heart. Every spring, when baseball season began, Pop would say, "Heaven is here." And it didn't matter if even his beloved Yankees made it to the World Series. He always wanted the World Series to take all seven games because it meant more baseball he'd get to watch. He also enjoyed watching the Iowa Hawkeyes, especially the girls' basketball team, the Green Bay Packers, and any team that LeBron James played for. He loved watching Sioux City sports as well, including Morningside College and his Sioux City Explorers. Pop said that he would be listening to the Explorers on the radio when he got to heaven. He sold tickets at Morningside College basketball and football games for over 30 years, and also worked for the Sioux City Community Schools. He was in charge of ticket sales for high school football games at Roberts Stadium for 30 years. Pop was inducted into the Iowa Men's Fast Pitch Softball Hall of Fame in 2009. He was famous all over the state of Iowa for throwing a rise ball that no one could hit. He received the NCC Honor Award from Morningside College, now University, for significant contributions and devoted service in 2000. Aside from sports, Pop loved watching classic cartoons and, of course, his family. He was a genuine, kind, welcoming person who always thought of others before himself. Robert Bob Kurth, 92, of Lamars, passed away on Saturday, October 21st, at the Good Samaritan Society of Lamars. Mass of Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, October 26th, at All Saints Parish, St. Joseph Catholic Church in Lamars. Burial will follow at Calvary Cemetery in Lamars. Visitation with the family present will begin at 4 p.m. with a 7 p.m. scriptural prayer service on Wednesday, October 25th at Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Lamars. Following the prayer service, there will be a Knights of Columbus Rosary followed by a fourth degree chalice service on Wednesday at the funeral home. We'll now move to the sports section, and we have a story about football. Black Raiders to travel to West Des Moines Dowling for first round. Perhaps the most tense moments Friday night at Elwood Olsen Stadium came after the final whistle sounded. East, who entered with a 5-3 record and ranked number 11 in the Class 5A RPI by the IHSAA, was on the bubble for a playoff spot as it needed to stay in the top 16 to qualify for the postseason. The Black Raiders' opponent, Johnston, entered 12th in the RPI and almost certainly needed a win to get in, and did so to the tune of a 48-13 victory over East to close the regular season. When the game went final and both coaches spoke to their squads, phones were pulled out to check on scores from other games that may affect either side's playoff chances, or in Johnston's case, seeding for a possible first-round home game next week. And despite what the scoreboard said when the clock went to all zeros, both teams took satisfaction in pulling some sort of win out of Week 9. Johnston's was short-term, win the game and get in. East's was a bit more long-term. A state champion in 1984, East has been a mainstay in the postseason since the early 1970s, qualifying a total of 28 times over that span. As of Saturday morning, make that 29. With the help of some other results around the state, East made the playoffs again as the number 15 ranked team in the 5A RPI. With the victory, Johnston shot up to number 10. East, making its second straight playoff appearance, will travel to number 2 West Des Moines Dowling Catholic Friday night. This actually already feels like week 3 of the playoffs for us because we felt like we've needed to win every game for a while now to get in, East head coach Michael Winkelplex said. East snapped a 6-year absence from the postseason last season. The Black Raiders fell 17-0 to Ankeny in the first round, regardless of last Friday's night score. And what happens going forward, East accomplished its number one objective this season, to start another year-over-year postseason streak. For East, the future came fast this season, as it was heavy on underclassmen in key spots, such as sophomore quarterback Cal Jepson and a handful of other young standouts such as sophomores Jacob Brayfogle and James Hogenkamp, along with freshmen Kaysen Claiborne and Chris Ford. Brayfogle scored 3 rushing touchdowns on 13 carries this season, but also was a major contributor on defense with 41 tackles prior to East's Week 9 contest, second most on the team. Claiborne went into the Johnston game leading the team in tackles with 42, and Hogenkamp was right there with 39.5. The Black Raiders workhorse running back, Miles Wagner, also has eligibility left after he ended his junior campaign with 118 carries for right around 600 yards and 9 rushing touchdowns, all team highs, to go with 26 catches for 324 yards and 3 more scores. In his first season as a starting quarterback, taking over from last season's record-breaking signal caller Cole Ritchie, Jepson took some lumps along the way, especially Friday night as he lost a fumble and threw an interception that was returned for a Johnston touchdown. But, like many Black Raider underclassmen, Jepson did more than enough to show potential show future and continued success. Jepson ended the regular season with around 1,200 passing yards with 19 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, with a completion percentage hovering around 60% on over 275 attempts. So Friday's loss may ultimately prove to be a win for East when the Black Raiders enter the 2024 with the experience and fire left from lopsided 2023 defeats. East was in position to make plays against the Dragons Friday night at Elwood Olsen Stadium, but came up short too often. Johnston, senior tight end wide receiver Jacob Simpson, a Minnesota commit, went for 6 catches, 114 yards, and 2 touchdowns. His first score, a 35-yard bomb from quarterback Will Safaris, came with a defender wrapped all around him, but the 6'5", 230-pound Simpson rose up and came down with a pass. While Simpson's physical makeup certainly helped, his mental confidence is what set him apart. We had a double move called, and when I was in the first half of my route, I saw the safety float to the middle of the field, Simpson said of his deep touchdown catch. So I knew I'd have a one-on-one opportunity, and in that situation, I trust myself to make that catch 10 out of 10 times. Will put up a nice ball, and we executed. That's all it was, execution. We've got the wheels turning. It happened late in the season, but we're going into the playoffs in full stride. While the East offense struggled against Johnston, it did reach the end zone twice as senior running back linebacker J.J. Gosch, who ended the game with 17 carries for 76 yards and then 2 scores. Now comes the hard part for the Black Raiders in turning the first part into the second and turning today's losses into tomorrow's successes. Whether that comes Friday against Dowling or in 2024, there's a reason to believe at East, no matter what the score against Johnston was. It wasn't the outcome we wanted, Winkelplex said. We lost 2 fumbles in the second half, threw a pick 6, and had a kickoff return for a touchdown on us. Other times we'd be moving the ball and shoot ourselves in the foot with a penalty. We were down 17-0, and I went for it on a fourth and one on our own 35-yard line. At that time, I felt like we could get 1 yard and get ourselves back in the game. That didn't work, and I thought our defense did a good job holding up. Simpson is one heck of a player. There's a reason he's going DI. On both his touchdowns, Chris Ford was in great position. It was just a great catch by a high-level player. And now we move on to hockey with the Musketeers. The Sioux City Musketeers split a pair of games this past weekend, staying at fourth place in the U.S. Hockey League's West Division. The Muskies jumped out to a 2-0 first-period lead in cruising to a 7-1 win over Lincoln Saturday during the host team's annual Pink in the Rink game at Tyson Events Center. Giancomo Martino and Caden Shahan both scored for Sioux City before the game was 10 minutes old. The Musketeer lead grew to 4-0 when Ty Hansen scored at 3:43 and Max Strand scored on the power play at 13:31 of the second. German Yavish responded for Lincoln with his first goal of the year at 18:55. The Musketeers closed out the win with a trio of third period tallies. Renmark connected at 4:28, Dylan Godbout scored on the power play at 13:14, and Ethan Gardula scored at 15:42. Sam Urban, who stopped 19 shots, collected the win for the Musketeers, while Jan Scholstak and Lucas Massey combined for 14 saves for the Stars. In a Sunday match at their Interstate 29 rival, Sioux City dropped a 4-3 decision to Sioux Falls as the Stampede rallied from a 2-0 deficit. Gavin Gary opened the scoring in the game when he scored his second goal of the season at 5:11 of the opening frame. After Strand tallied a power play marker at 14:20, the Musketeers entered the locker room at the end of the first period with a 2-goal cushion. Sioux Falls got on the board at 5:33 of the second when Grant Dillard was rewarded for going hard to the net for his first career goal. Brian Nicholas countered for Sioux City with a power play at 11:49, but Will McDonald's goal at 12:36 kept the Stampede within one. Gennady Shelley's power play goal for Sioux Falls at 9:06 of the final period tied the game, and when John McNalis fired a shot from the near boards that found the back of the net with 2 seconds remaining in regulation, the comeback was complete. Caleb Hale had 17 saves in the win, while Urban finished with 24 saves. And we'll now move to Morningside University football. Number 3 Morningside survived a scare from 2-win Jamestown Saturday as a 2 fourth-quarter touchdown runs by quarterback Lennox Brown lifted the Mustangs to a 39-29 win. Morningside took a 10-8 lead after the first quarter on Bryson Wilkie field goal and a Brown 69 touchdown run. Brown's lone touchdown pass came on the first play of the second quarter when he connected with Ryan Cole for 16 yards. A Jamal Jones interception return for a touchdown gave the Mustangs a 24-15 lead at the intermission. The Jimmies closed the gap to 24-22 after Zachariah Ham 1 yard score with 4:40 left in the third quarter and took their first lead of the game on a John Grant 10-yard scoring play to Ryan Collins with 13:24 remaining in the game. The Mustangs then went 3 and out for their next possession, but Mela Campton forced a fumble on the punt return and Dylan Gray recovered. Morningside immediately capitalized as Brown scored on an 8-yard run and then ran for the 2-point conversion game to give the Mustangs a 32-29 lead with 9:01 remaining. A 5-yard scoring run by Brown left 3:42 left with 3:42 left iced the game. The junior from Council Bluffs finished with 130 yards rushing. Cash Parker threw 101 yards for the Mustangs. Cole added 66 rushing yards and 41 receiving yards. Drew Sellon had 6 catches for 64 yards. The Mustangs recorded 3 interceptions and a fumble recovery in the game. Hampton and Landry Phipps had interceptions with no return, while Jones had the pick 6. Lonnell Boyd Jr. had 8 total tackles, and Isaac Pingle and Hayden Mendel added 7 each. Boyd Jr. also blocked a Jamestown field goal attempt. Morningside travels to Orange City Saturday for a marquee matchup with number one Northwestern, the defending NAIA national champions. The Mustangs beat the Red Raiders 30-29 in the first game last year en route to an undefeated regular season. And we'll now move to Dear Abby, and our letter is, Dear Abby, my husband loves cooking for the family. Unfortunately, he's a horrible cook. My kids hate what he prepares, so most of the food goes in the trash. I've had many conversations with him about this, begging him not to do it and telling him if he wants to cook, he should make something for himself. His reply is always, I'm not forcing you guys to eat my food. You're welcome to eat something else. But when we do that, he sulks and ruins everyone's day, so we end up giving in. I don't know how to get through to him about this. Signed, Tastes Bad in the East, and Abby's reply, You can talk till you're blue in the face and your husband still will not get the message because he does not want to hear it. He doesn't care about the waste. Of course, you and the kids should explain exactly what you don't like about what he has prepared and offer suggestions about the seasoning, etc., what might help him. And perhaps you could all cook together from time to time. In the future, when the children achieve independence and the family gathers, each family member may want to bring their food with them. However, while they live under your roof, they'll have to accept what their father insists on giving them. Our next letter. Dear Abby, my son is getting married in Mexico in 6 months. I would like to take a special friend with me as my plus one. My wife has dementia. It is quite severe, and she has been in a care facility for 2 years. She no longer recognizes anyone, including me. So it goes, he wants to take the special friend with him to the wedding in Mexico. My wife has dementia. It is quite severe, and she has been in a care facility for 2 years. She no longer recognizes anyone, including me. Would it be wrong to take my lady friend to Mexico? We haven't been intimate, but romance at the beach in Mexico is very possible. What do I do? Signed, Uncertain in Iowa. And Abby responds, Your son's wedding is not the time to surprise anyone with this lady's presence. Depending upon how large your family is and how close you all are, some people may already be aware that you are involved with someone. But ask your son and his fiance if bringing her would be disruptive, and gracefully base your decision on their response. A wedding is supposed to be about the bride and groom on their special day with no distractions. Then, Dear Abby, I heard my old high school boyfriend was arrested. It made the news. I had not seen or heard from him in more than a decade. Well, I'm relieved that I dodged a bullet. I am happily married to someone else now. I feel terrible for his mom. We are still friends on social media and keep up with each other. Should I reach out to her in what must be a humiliating and concerning time, or should I just keep to myself? Signed, Hesitant in Texas. And the response, because you and this woman have a relationship that extended beyond the one between you and her son, by all means reach out. Tell her you heard what happened and that you care about her and want to be supportive. She may or may not contact you, but she'll know you care about her. Knowing someone cares could make all the difference for her. And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, October 24th. I'm your reader, Dagna. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. Shortly after modern humans arrived in Europe, the Neanderthals disappeared, and scientists think we had something to do with it. Neanderthals, or their direct ancestors, migrated out of Africa and into the Middle East and Europe around 250,000 years ago. Soon, they were well adapted to the environment. Large eyes helped them see in the longer nights and darker winters. Stout bodies helped them retain heat and handle large prey, and provided space for the large liver and kidneys needed for a diet heavy in protein. Their brains were as big as ours, but spent processing power on their greater visual and motor abilities. This may not have allowed them to develop higher communication or conceptual thinking to match ours, which may have been their downfall. Modern humans arrived on the scene 45,000 years ago, less physically adapted, but more mentally adaptable. We had cooperative hunting methods superior to the Neanderthals, allowing us to outcompete them for food, and perhaps reducing the large herbivore populations that they depended on. We also had superior tools and weapons. When there were conflicts between the groups, as there have been among tribes throughout history, our superior technology probably allowed us to prevail. But we weren't only fighting. There must have been considerable interbreeding, since we can find 1-3% of the Neanderthal genome in modern man. Which means the Neanderthals never completely disappeared. A little bit of them is alive in us today. I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.